On today's episode of the Fumble Rooski podcast, breaking news, head coach Brian Callahan fired by the Titans after just 24 total games coached, and they start the season 1-5 and losing to the now 2-4 Las Vegas Raiders 20-10. Chiefs find their form once more as they get the win on Sunday Night Football against the Lions 30-17. The Bucs just cannot be stopped, and they finally get a win without having to rely on a game-winning field goal against the 49ers. And the Seahawks getting back on track, getting a win against the hot Jaguars team 20-12. After that, Monday Night Football and Week 6 top three, bottom three. This is the Fumble Rooski podcast.
It may not have always showed it in the stat sheet, but you can see him making throws when he needs to make the throws.
Back-to-back games where he has three touchdowns.
Someone's got to get that six or seven spot.
He's an elite wide receiver as a rookie.
Truly a lose-lose scenario for both sides.
Welcome to the Fumble Rooski podcast by Power 88 Dean Radio and Secret Weapon Consulting. I'm Chris Kostich. CJ Medeiros, Justin Tucker with us today, the depressed Ravens fan today, but won't be talking about the Ravens today. We'll be talking about right now about the Titans firing head coach Brian Callahan, 24 games at the helm, only four wins at the helm. Boy, an ugly tenure for Brian Callahan, and it comes to a fiery blaze, to say the least. They got their first win of the season against the Cardinals 2 weeks ago, 22-21, on some tomfoolery, to say the least. But other than that, this was a Titans team that was not competitive by any sense of means. This is a Titans team that's in a very bad place, you know? It's not like Brian Callahan got the reins of this team with a good roster. Like, this is not a good roster by any sense of the means. And you got a little bit of hope by getting Cam Ward. It's hard to say that he looks good or bad because he has such a terrible team around him, but there's still that hope. But, you know, organization decided it was time to let him go. Fellas, thoughts from you. CJ, we'll start with you.
Now, if you go back to last offseason, you guys probably all remember how I was surprised that Callahan wasn't a one and done. It's not like he ever showed flashes as a coach. It was just putrid from start to finish. And I said, well, hey, you know, it's going to be a really good coaching carousel this offseason. You know, the Titans should definitely try their luck there, and they didn't. And I bet now they're wishing they did, because I know one and done head coaches usually, I won't say are rare, but they're uncommon, I'd say. And I said, yeah, I don't care how bad it looks. You got to get rid of them. And, well, looks like I've been vindicated, because the Titans have shown zero signs of life. And don't even argue with me that they at least have one win. They beat the Cardinals, and Chris already stated it. Oh my God, that was ugly. The Cardinals shot themselves in the foot and literally gave the Titans the game on a silver platter through a quite literal comedy of errors. So, yeah, this was definitely deserved. In 24 total games coached, he has, like, what, four wins? Or something to that effect? Like, because I think he only had, like, what, three wins last year? So, yeah. So he either has four or five wins. But, yeah, but it's not so much the win numbers itself, as long as they're looking good, you know, they're competitive, they're actually building. But none of these games were exceptionally close. None of these games the Titans really had a fighting chance in, not unless their opponent just self-destructed. And, yeah, this was a well-deserved firing. But for me, I can't help but notice the timing. They fired Callahan the week before they have to play their former head coach, Mike Vrabel, and the New England Patriots, who are already at 4-2. And four wins was the amount of wins New England had last year and the year before that. So they're already tied there. you know, as far as that goes. So New England, at least on paper, seems to be turning things around. And I feel like maybe the Titans were afraid New England was just going to roll into Nissan Stadium and put belt to ass. They didn't want to do that embarrassment. So it looks like they're literally hoping that what we would call the interim bump is real. It's kind of like the backup bump, but for coaches. And they did hire Mike McCoy, their offensive assistant, or they promoted him to head coach. And Mike McCoy, I believe, is also 28-38 as an NFL head coach. So do with that what you will.
Better than 4-19.
Yeah, true. Still not great, but yeah. So I feel like this is the Titans hoping that the interim bump bails them out, but I don't think it will because that roster is garbage.
Yeah. 4-19 was Brian Callahan's record. 23 games coached. Pardon my misstep there. 23, not 24. Tuck, your thoughts on the firing and thoughts on the upcoming matchup with the Titans and the Pats?
When I first heard the news, I was like, you can actually fire a coach during the season. I wonder why that hasn't happened on my side of the ball, on my team yet. But I digress. This isn't about the Ravens. As far as Tennessee is concerned, Cam Ward said it best. They're straight ass. I wish them all the best. I don't think they're inherently bad because they do have some pieces. I just think as they're currently constructed and coached, they're 1-5 for a reason. Not to say they don't have pieces around Cam Ward and that he can't be successful, because if you actually look at the way he plays and how he throws the ball and how good he can look at times, you can tell he can be a franchise quarterback, no problem. But it's just the way that the team is currently constructed, the talent that is currently around him, it's not enough. I saw Max Crosby have a one-on-one with the right tackle, go right by him for a sack, and just did Cam Ward's signature celebration. So I was like, yeah, that's going to be a rough day. But in all things considered, I think that the Tennessee Titans are attractive for a head coaching spot in the future, because I don't think Mike McCoy is going to be the head coach for long. I just think that the situation right now is what it is, and I don't think they can find a head coach on the spot right now. So at the end of the season, they'll find someone available, but as currently constructed, they'll just ride it out at the end of the season. And as far as the matchup with the Patriots is concerned, I bet they wish they had Mike Vrabel right now, because he's making the Patriots look very, very good.
Yeah. If Vrabel and the Patriots were to win next Sunday, then Vrabel would have as many wins as an opposing coach in Nissan Stadium as Brian Callahan has as head coach of the Tennessee Titans. And that one win was against the Patriots last season in overtime. How about that? But bad. If I were to give the leniency, or if I were to give the edge to any sort of storyline here in terms of the interim bump or the Mike Vrabel revenge game, I might have to hammer the Mike Vrabel revenge game. He already said in a press conference he's streaming this week, just as he would any other week. That's a lie. That's a Bill Belichick answer. He's got steam. He's going to have steam coming out of his ears. And those boys in New England are going to be motivated, to say the least. So I'm excited to watch that game. I'm going to complain about it on Friday's episode. But can we have one game where the Pats don't have to go to Tennessee? Maybe. Like, that'd be nice. Like, we haven't had a home game against Tennessee since we lost in that playoff game. Brady's last playoff game with the Patriots. Help me! Help me! All right. Anything else you guys want to touch on from this?
All right. Not really.
I'm good.
Word. Let's move on. We're going to take a quick break. When you come back, Chiefs. I don't know if they're back or not, but they're alive. That's all that matters. They are alive. This is the Fumble Rooski Podcast.
It may not have always showed it in the stat sheet, but you can see him making throws when he needs to make the throws.
Back-to-back games where he has 3 touchdowns.
Someone's got to get that 6th or 7th spot.
He's an elite wide receiver as a rookie.
Truly a lose-lose scenario for both sides.
Welcome back to the Fumble Rooski Podcast by Power 88 Dean Radio and Secret Weapon Consulting. Chris, CJ, Tuck. The Chiefs get a 30-17 win on Sunday Night Football against the Lions. And Dan Campbell said, well, if you're going to beat the Chiefs, you got to put up 30. They didn't put up 30, but you know who did? The Chiefs did. Chiefs put up 30 and got the win. I'm going to say it right now, but I know I said like right before we cut the break there that I don't know if they're back, but they're alive. They never left to begin with. That's for certain. This is a Chiefs team that had a gauntlet to start the season besides the Giants game, but the Giants game, they still kind of struggled in. They clobbered the Ravens. Sorry, Tuck. But you still add in the fact that you have the Ravens in there. Chargers, Eagles, Ravens, Jaguars, Lions. All of those are at the very least, like Ravens at the beginning of the season or Ravens at that time were considered a playoff team still. I don't know, Tuck, do you still consider your team a playoff team? One word answer.
Yes, unfortunately.
Okay. With that being said, playoff teams. Jaguars are there. I would consider them a playoff team right now. Next week, it got the Raiders, so should be a little bit easier. But it's kind of the same thing with the Eagles. They also went through a bit of a gauntlet themselves. You're not going to win every single game in a gauntlet unless you are the New England, the 07 Patriots or the 72 Dolphins. Like, you're not winning every single game in a gauntlet. But they found a way to get it done today. Everything was clicking, and just seems like every time that they have some loss where you just like say, look, just point at Chris Jones, for example, right? Shows no effort on the game winning touchdown from Trevor Lawrence, doesn't show any effort. And there's a lot of stuff from the media coming in and whatnot and stuff surrounding that, stuff surrounding the team. And once again, they come out. And they get a convincing win. It's not like they squeaked out a win against Detroit. They beat them soundly and handily. And this was one of the probably the hottest offense in the entire league coming into this game. And they held them to 17 points. Well done. That's all I have to say. And honestly, there's not really, I would say if you were to point at one specific play, look at the first drive of the game, forcing the Lions to keep shooting themselves in the foot, getting a field goal on the first drive, coming back downfield, scoring a touchdown. Now you've set the tone. Now you've set the tone for the rest of the game. So got to give Reed and the rest of the team credit for that. Now Mahomes in his last 3 games, 10 total touchdowns and 1 interception. He's currently 2nd in MVP odds. I don't believe he should be, but either way, point's still standing. Mahomes is playing some good ball recently. Tuck, we'll start with you on this.
First and foremost, congratulations to the Kansas City Chiefs. Excuse me. Congratulations to them. They deserve the win, but unfortunate for Detroit that they lost Brian Branch for the next game because he just got suspended for 1 game due to his conduct after the game, starting that fight with Juju Smith-Schuster. As far as Kansas City is concerned, I think they'll have games where they'll look up and down, where they look like they're former Super Bowl, reigning defending Super Bowl champions. And then they'll have other games where they're like, this is the Chiefs. As long as they have Patrick Mahomes and Andy Reid on the same offense, they'll always be in every game. But it just feels like the defense has gotten better, but the offense is kind of like stagnated from where it was over the past few years. I think that's kind of due to how Travis Kelce has kind of declined over the years and the fact that they haven't had consistency from the wide receiver spot outside of Tyquan Thornton. who's actually been quite unbelievable since he's left the Patriots. Funny how that works out. But oh no, it's a good win for the Kansas City Chiefs considering what happened on Monday night. It's a great victory, a bad loss for Detroit, but I think they'll bounce back just fine. Oh no, it's pretty good for them.
CJ?
I hear the Chiefs fans thumping their chest saying, "We're back, we're back." It's like, okay, all right. Let's just pump the brakes here, because when you're not playing an Arrowhead, you look pretty beatable. You know? Heck, even in Arrowhead, you know, Philly went in there and beat them, so do with that what you will. But overall, it's looking good. But the biggest part of this isn't even what happened on the field. It's the fact that next game, they're getting back Rashee Rice, who is far and away their best receiver. And on a side note, Travis Kelce and all them wearing shirts that say free four, or, you know, Travis or Rice's number, you know, free him. That's in, like, that is astronomically poor taste considering what he did, but whatever, whatever.
I mean, what do you expect him to do? It's just, it's their teammate at the end of the day, too.
Okay, cool. And if one of us did that, you wouldn't be saying, oh, free whoever, but I digress. Actually, Adam might, but that's because Adam, that's a great man right there. That is a great guy. But, hey, all jokes aside, though, like you said, as long as they have Mahomes, it's kind of like, when New England had Brady, like, as long as that guy's there, you cannot count them out. And the Lions, though, that's interesting. We'll get to that later. But I do want to say, like I said, as long as you have Mahomes, can't be you can't count him out. And he's playing well. Do I think he's playing well enough to be second in MVP voting? Admittedly, no, I really don't. And don't get me wrong, he's playing well, but I feel like that's more so Mahomes, the name, more so, you know, than the play on the field. The defense is interesting. You know, one night they get gashed, the next they put a stop on the Lions. But hey, you know, if they figure it out, then yeah, then they'll be back. But right now, they the division's looking kind of winnable. Denver's a bit of an enigma. I think they're starting to turn the page, but there's still some growing pains that they're going through. The Chargers were looking like a juggernaut until everyone decided to get hurt. They're down both of their top running backs, although Hampton might come back. They're down both of their tackles, so no run game, no bookends on the line. That's looking bad. And, as for the Raiders, they are the Raiders. Outside of a fluky week one win, they've done nothing. Geno Smith is turning the ball over like no one's business. And yeah, sure, they beat the Titans. Counterpoint, it's the Titans. But yeah, Chiefs are 3-3. It's not where you thought they'd be, but, you know, but they're looking dangerous. I want to see them string a few wins together before I can say, okay, yeah, they're back. They are actually back. And when we look ahead to Kansas City's schedule, it's getting a little tough. So up next, they're hosting the Las Vegas Raiders. That should be a win, and I think it will be. I know divisional games can be a little wonky, but that's a win, so long as Geno keeps baking up turnovers like prime Jameis Winston. Next, they're hosting the Washington Commanders. Now that Jaden Daniels is likely going to be back and fully healthy, that should be a game, should be a good game. It should be a game that I feel like Kansas City should win, but the Commanders are not a team to sleep on. Next, they're in Buffalo. Buffalo's weird. They're good on paper, but they've beaten up on some really bad teams. Then New England went into Orchard Park, New York, and just served them a fat L. So maybe Buffalo learns from that. Maybe they're not for real. I don't know.
And maybe we'll have an updated take later on in the show after the Bills and Falcons game gets done.
True. That could very well be the case. And then they're going to be in Denver, which, hey, maybe Denver's not quite up to the Chiefs level yet, but that's a divisional game, and it's in Mile High, which is really tough. So the next four games, I think, are going to be a great measuring stick. They're not technically running a gauntlet, although you could argue they are, but it's not a cakewalk either, outside of maybe the Raiders. So, but as for the Lions, what the hell do I even think of them? Seriously. Like, are they missing their coordinators? Are they not? Because one week, you know, they're out there putting belt to ass, and then the next week they just say, offense? Defense? What are these concepts you speak of? I am a man without coordinator. So, yeah, like I said, maybe they are missing their coordinators because the way they just run so hot and cold is concerning. And if the Packers could figure it out, maybe they really can wrestle that division for them. But for both teams, whether you win or you lost, this is still a very big wait and see moment. Because if the trends continue, it could be bad.
I'm not worried about the Lions. Like, this is the first game since week one that they didn't crack 20 points. And since week two, when they put up 52 against the Bears, they've been over 30 plus points. I'm not worried about that. But what you could potentially be worried about for the Lions next week, because Brian Branch, I don't know if you guys remember the post-game incident where he slapped the shit out of Juju Smith-Schuster. He is currently suspended for one game. Breaking news from 28 minutes ago. Wanted to save that for this segment real quick. But yeah, Brian Branch is appealing this as well. But as of right now, Brian Branch suspended one game for unsportsmanlike conduct after the game. All right, let's move on. Buccaneers get the win 30-19, their first win of the season, where it didn't come down to a game-winning field goal. All that and more. This is the Fumbaruski Podcast.
It may not have always showed it in the stat sheet, but you can see him making throws when he needs to make the throws.
Back-to-back games where he has 3 touchdowns.
Someone's got to get that 6th or 7th spot.
He's an elite wide receiver as a rookie.
Truly a lose-lose scenario for both sides.
Welcome back to the Fumbaruski Podcast. He's CJ. He's Tuck. I'm Chris. The Buccaneers with a 30-19 win against the 49ers. There's not much else to say, honestly. This is just Baker. This is Baker by a million. Baker, 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 and more Baker. I mean, you lost to Mika Ibuka for half this game. You were dwindling at wide receiver. You were dwindling. Niners were also beat up themselves. Props to them, of course, for having battle in a lot of these games. But doesn't matter who Baker has out there on the field. He's going to get stuff. He's going to get it done. He's going to get it done over and over and over again. And that's why he's probably, that's why he's an MVP front runner. That's why he's, and that's why he should be the MVP front runner. He's not, for some reason, but he should be. It's a crime that he isn't, because he is playing insane ball right now. Only one interception, a load more of touchdowns. He's making big play after big play after big play. Carries the team on his back, talks his shit, and he gets it done. That's what I got for this game. That's all I need from this game. Just confirms what I already know. CJ, we'll start with you this time.
Can't hear you.
It would seem that I was muted. Oh, boy. Baker Mayfield. What a guy. You know, just that's all I got. Just what a guy. I mean, yeah, you can argue that the 49ers are injured and stuff. But, hey, Mac Jones is wheeling and dealing, too. Let's not before this game. This was, I think, a good game for the Bucs defense, you know, bringing Mac Jones down to earth, more or less putting a lid on McCaffrey. Well, he did over 100 scrimmage yards. He only averaged 3.2 yards a carry. So he got his touches, but you were able to limit them, right? A lot of that's just through volume. And what I like is that this dispels any existing narrative that, oh, you know, Baker has too many weapons, right? You know, Godwin, he wasn't even playing. Egbuka went down, and Evans isn't playing. So what does he say? Hey, Cameron Johnson, 4 catches, 64 yards, a touchdown. Cade Otton, 5 catches. Sterling Shepard, heck, here you go, 51 yards. Tez Johnson, first catch and only catch of the game is a 45-yard house call. And Rashad White stepping up relatively well, 65 yards, almost 4 yards of carry. Not quite, but and a touchdown with the absence of Bucky Irving. Sean Tucker, 6 carries, 25 yards for another touchdown. They are down. Wide receiver 1, 2, and 3. And still got a 2-score victory over the 49ers. Like I said, are hurt themselves. But going into this game, they were 4-1. Mac Jones, 3-0 started up to that point. Let's put some respect on their name. Jamel Dean, Kendall Vildor, each getting a pick. Levante David getting a sack. Yaya Diabe with 2. Jamel Dean getting a nice sack on a corner blitz. You know, I think they got to Jones like 5 or 6 times. So this was a good team win, spearheaded by Mr. Baker Reagan Mayfield. Seriously, this guy is an MVP front runner, rightfully so. 12 touchdowns, only 1 pick, 1,500 yards, 66% completion percentage, and a passer rating of 108.5. Not even taking into consideration what he's done on the ground, which I don't think he has any rushing touchdowns quite yet. But, hey, he's still getting things done there as well. He does have 158 yards on the ground as well. So he is moving the chains with his arm and his legs. For the Niners, yeah, you knew this was going to happen. The backup bump, as we like to call it, only lasted so long. But, hey, you still have a positive record. And Purdy's probably going to be coming back next week, so you can hang your hat on that. So overall, I think it was a great win for Tampa. And for me, Baker's got to be the MVP front runner, him or Dak.
So I just looked up DraftKings, and unfortunately, they just don't think the same way.
Who the hell's number one if Mahomes is second?
Yeah, who's number one?
Josh Allen. Baker Mayfield's third.
Matt. Oh, I beg your finest pardon.
Goff is fifth, but Goff and Stafford are both tied, really. Then it's Herbert, Love, Daniels, Drake May, Lamar, and then Dak.
Look, I know the Cowboys just lost to the Panthers, but, and you know, we all like to make fun of the Cowboys and by extension Dak, but Dak's balling out. You know, 1,600 yards, 13 touchdowns, 3 picks. I mean, that's really nothing to sneeze at.
Yeah. I don't know. Tuck, your thoughts.
Man, I'm so happy for Baker, man, through all his trials and tribulations he's been through, especially with the Browns, Carolina, getting his chance with the Rams, and then finally having a place in Tampa Bay. I thought he would be successful in Tampa Bay based upon the structure and the weapons that he had around him. I was like, this, if he's going to make a shot, it's going to be here. And I'm glad over his last 2 seasons, he's thrown the most touchdown passes. I was like, yes, yes. Because I've always liked Baker, but I couldn't cheer for him because he's a Browns fan. But once he left, I was actually hoping he would be successful. Now that he's in Tampa Bay and he's succeeding and he looks great, I'm happy for him. He should be the MVP front runner. Don't know why Josh Allen is the MVP front runner, but I digress. What was it? 12 touchdowns, one interception?
Yep. 12 touchdowns, 1 interception.
Yes.
Impressive. That is unbelievable. The only game he lost was to the Eagles, and that's it. Every other game he's been clutch and been the best out of everyone. I hope he wins MVP. I hope he's able to keep up these performances. And the only thing I have to say else about this, the Browns are the Browns.
The Browns are the Browns, indeed. The Panthers are also the Panthers.
Yeah, but I believe in Bryce Young. I think he'll be just fine after his performance against the Cowboys.
Oh, yeah. Bryce Young's starting to turn it up a little bit as well. But looking at the Buccaneers' upcoming schedule, which the Bucs will have to play Carolina twice, of course, still. Detroit next week, then New Orleans. Then they got New England, Buffalo, the Rams. And it starts to mellow out a little bit with the Cardinals. Hopefully, I mean, by that point, you'll have your 3 top receivers back. But this game against Detroit could be interesting. You add in Brian Branch being suspended for a game. So this could be an interesting game to watch, Tampa and Detroit. And I don't know, let's say right now, Ruski game of the week. I haven't looked at any other games on the schedule. Ruski game of the week, Detroit and Tampa.
It could very well be, yeah.
But Baker's had, believe it or not, he's had Detroit's number.
He has indeed. He's beat him the last 2 years.
After that loss to the Chiefs, hey, maybe it's looking a little more certain than usual.
Yeah. But
it's at Detroit, though.
Monday Night Football.
It's in Detroit. Ooh.
But, one game that Tampa lost, they almost completed a big comeback. And that was the game that Baker threw his only interception, which was during said comeback towards the tail end of the game. But looking at the Niners side real quick, we mentioned all the injuries that they're going through. They're going to get those guys back at some point, which is going to be great, like George Kittle, Brandon Ayuk maybe. But Fred Warner, you've lost him. Confirmed to have a fractured and dislocated ankle. Surgery scheduled for tomorrow. Coach Kyle Shanahan believes Warner will be back on the field in the offseason. Another one. And just every right when you think that the Niners won't, I mean, they've been dealing with this all season. They've been dealing with this for the last two seasons now. They've been dealing with it every single season that they didn't have a playoff run, pretty much. Like, that's been what the downfall has been for this team. It's unlucky. It's terrible. There's not much else to say, really, besides, like, if you thought that it was going to end, it's never ending. It really is never ending with this team. Thoughts from you guys real quick.
But they still managed to get one.
For now, I mean, no Bosa, no Warner. You know, their defense got pillaged this offseason. It might actually be over. I mean, for real this time. I mean, they're always going to find a way. But when everyone started going down earlier in the year, I said, all right, you got to take your strength conditioning coach, pat him on the shoulder, and launch him into the San Francisco Bay. That thought has not changed. It has only intensified. So, yeah.
Yeah.
I wouldn't say it's over yet. I think this rendition of the 49ers is over, but I don't think the 49ers themselves are over yet. As long as they have Kyle, I think they have a chance. Maybe not win a Super Bowl, but to be in contention.
Yeah. Honestly, you probably do get to a point where, all right, like, maybe have to start thinking about going with a rebuild or something, maybe, and rebuild around Brock Purdy and the other talented guys that you got. But who knows what they'll end up doing.
But they have.
I'm saying, like, do it over again. Because, obviously, it's not, like, it's worked to an extent, but it's not working.
I see your point.
Yeah. All right. Take another break when we come back. Seahawks getting back in the win column with a 20-12 win against the Jaguars. Right when we thought Jacksonville was there, suddenly feels like they're not. This is the Fumbleruski Podcast.
It may not have always showed it in the stat sheet, but you can see him making throws when he needs to make the throws.
Back-to-back games where he has 3 touchdowns.
Someone's got to get that 6 or 7 spot.
He's an elite wide receiver as a rookie.
Truly a lose-lose scenario for both sides.
Welcome back to the Fumbleruski Podcast by Power 818 Radio and Secret Weapon Consulting. The Seahawks with a 20-12 victory against Jacksonville. Seattle sneakily good on the road. They're 3-0 now. And even though they couldn't run the ball to save their life, Sam Darnold, 295 yards passing. JSN showing out. JSN is a top 5 receiver in this league. And he's playing like one at the very least. This batch of Ohio State receivers have been gross, not counting Marvin Harrison Jr. just yet. But these Buckeye receivers are gross. They're very good. Very, very good. And JSN, 8 catches, 162 yards and a touchdown. And Seattle's defense, lit it up against Jacksonville as well. That's really what I got for Seattle, is they needed this win. This was a good win to get them right back on track, because take a tough loss against the Buccaneers in a heartbreaking fashion. And you need a game like this to kind of get yourself right back into the right track. Thoughts from you guys about the Seahawks real quick. Tuck, you go.
I'll go. Congratulations to the Seahawks. Congratulations to the head coach, Mike McDaniels, who I miss on the defensive side of the ball. When I look at their stats and I see 33 pressures and 7 sacks, I'm like,
you mean Mike McDonald?
What did I say?
Mike McDaniels.
I'm sorry, Mike McDonald. Sorry. I miss him. I really do. Because when I see 7 sacks and 33 pressures, I'm like, why isn't that happening with us? But be that as it may, this isn't about the Ravens. Seattle is actually looking really good, and Sam Darnold once again is proving all of his doubters wrong with the Seattle Seahawks. They're looking very good, and as you pointed out, JSN is a stud. He is an outright stud, and he's playing like one right now. Right now, he is a top 5 wide receiver, and I think he leads the league in the yards. Could have, would have, should have, Adam. But as far as the Seattle Seahawks go, I think they're a playoff contender. I think it comes down to either them or the Rams for the title in the NFC West. But as far as I see it, I don't really think there's that much concern. I think the Seahawks will win out or win the division. I think they have a manageable schedule ahead with that defense and the offense that they have. But I do think they need to fix the running game a little bit. They need a little more consistency in that department. But outside of that, if Sam Darnold and JSN continue to play like this, watch out, because they could be a threat in the NFC.
I'll agree with you on that. I was saying this last year too. It feels like I keep repeating myself. The run game should be a lot better than it is. And my problem with them last year was that they don't run the ball enough. But you know, you have 26 rushing attempts between Kenneth Walker, Zach Charbonnet, and throw 4 in there for Sam Darnold. You're only getting 60 yards at 2.3 a clip. Zach Charbonnet is averaging less than 2.5 per carry. Like, that's terrible. That is terrible. Kenneth Walker needs to get more love, because he just does. And that's your number one guy. And the fact that Zach Charbonnet is getting more touches than Kenneth Walker is a crime. That is a crime against humanity.
And against fantasy owners.
Yes, especially against fantasy owners. I'm not even talking as a Kenneth Walker fantasy owner.
I mean, either.
I'm just saying, like, that's your top dog. You may as well be your lead back. You may as well just say, screw the running back by committee thing you got going here, and give Kenneth Walker his freaking touches.
Don't feel bad for those fantasy owners. They knew what they were getting themselves into going into the season.
Yeah. But you see the JSN numbers there, currently on pace for just short of 2,000 receiving yards and 9 touchdowns, according to ESPN projections. CJ, I'll leave the table to you.
Would that be the record?
No. So, the thing with this game was that it was a fight between two teams that I feel like it's too early to say are on the up and up, but look like have solid, dare I say, bright futures. And when these two teams collide, one's just going to have to wrestle the momentum away from the other. That's just how it is. They're both coming in with momentum. They're both coming in with their own hopes, and it's not a battle of the better coach. It's not a battle of which team's better on paper. This literally is just who wants it more, who's willing to fight harder for their future. And no ifs, ands, or buts. It was the Seahawks. Now, the Jags, to their credit, I will tell you, did put up a bit of a fight. But at the end of the day, I just think Seattle play a little bit harder. They got it done. Lawrence, 258 yards, 2 touchdowns. Darnold, 295 yards, 2 touchdowns. Good fight overall. But for me, it was the fact that Seattle outgained them on the ground. I mean, outgained them in general. They had 346 total yards to Jacksonville's 273. Seattle averaged 6.4 yards a play. Jacksonville averaged 4. And overall, it was that while the Jaguars had the ball, they didn't play efficient football. They only averaged 4 yards a play, and they beat Seattle pretty handily in time of possession. They had the ball for 33 minutes and 21 seconds compared to Seattle only having the ball for 26 minutes and 39 seconds. And a lot of it was penalties, too. Jacksonville had 3 more penalties for 20 more yards. They had 10 penalties for 76 yards. That, once again, that's just not efficient football. And yes, they did go 3 for 3 on fourth down, but only when they had to. This is a game where, while it was close, the Jaguars were just outclassed. Even though that was a pretty good duel between Darnold and Lawrence, you knew who the better team was. This wasn't an iffy win. This wasn't a, oh, if this ended differently. Nah, Seattle, I think, just outclassed them. But if you're Jacksonville, you're still 4-2. You know, I don't think it's time to panic. I really don't. I think this is a game where you just, you know, you got to go back to the drawing board. And next week, you are hosting the LA Rams. That's going to be a tall task, but it is a very winnable game. You know, considering the Rams have been struggling a bit.
In London as well.
Yeah, in London. So that's practically your second home. You're going across the pond. They love you over there in the UK, I've decided. And then you have to go to Vegas, which, once again, very winnable against Geno. Then you have to go to Houston, which, are the Texans good now? I don't know. They beat up an injury-prone Baltimore, but that's not the most impressive thing in the world. And then you have to host the Chargers, which, once again, should be a little tough. These games, outside of the Raiders, are all going to be tough, but they're very winnable. Like I said with Kansas City earlier, these are your measuring stick games. Well, Jags, see how you measure up. And then Seattle, you have to be really happy. You know, you can breathe a sigh of relief that you won that game, but you are also going to have a tough next few games as well. You're hosting Houston, you're visiting the Commanders, you're hosting Arizona, and then you're visiting the Rams. So you have 2 division games in your next 4, but these are all winnable for you. Once again, these are measuring stick games for these young teams. It's another case of, you know, you've got 2 young teams that are now both 4-2. Sure, one beat the other, but for Seattle, I think it's too early to just say, okay, we're back. And for the Jags, just you don't get too bummed. I want to see if Seattle can block out the noise and keep churning ahead. And I want to see if Jacksonville can rebound.
Yeah. If you look at Jacksonville, really, it's like you go into this game, and especially after the win against Kansas City on Monday night, you don't look at this as a potential letdown game just because of the caliber of Seattle. But you are disappointed with what you end up seeing in entirety. You only put up 12 points, or the Seahawks only put up 12 points. Trevor Lawrence got sacked 7 times. I would have liked to have seen Trevor Lawrence run the ball a little bit more. That would have been fun. But offense just seemed dead again right after it felt like that. Things were starting to turn around. But, Tuck, your thoughts?
I feel like there's another level Jacksonville can go to, because I felt like there was a resurgence with Travis Etienne. Like, I thought he would break out even more, but it's just not there right now. It was just a bad game for the offense. Trevor Lawrence is doing fine, but again, what can he do when he gets sacked 7 times with 33 pressures? So it was already an uphill battle. Jacksonville's defense, all things considered, only gave up 20 points, which isn't bad against Seattle at home. So only 20 points and you only lose by 8. If you turn some of these things into touchdowns, it's actually a tie game and it could go into overtime. But I think they just need to find like more consistency on the offensive side of the ball. I don't know if you need to ask Travis Hunter to stay on the offensive side more or less, but they need to figure this out, because I do believe Jacksonville could be a playoff caliber team. But I feel like their offensive struggles will be what keeps them from going like far if they do make the playoffs. So if they don't find the consistency, it could be rough for them to just not make it or to get bounced in the first round.
I agree with that. 100%. I mean, like, Brian Thomas had 8 catches, 90 yards, and a touchdown. Like, the seeds are there. The seeds are there. It's just a matter of capitalizing. Will God give you rain today? And if he does, what do you do with it? And the Jags this week, well, they didn't plant any sunflowers, unfortunately. All right. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we're going to advance a couple hours to after the Monday Night Football games, give it a little recap of those, and then week 6, top 3, bottom 3. This is the Full Maruski Podcast.
I've always showed it in the stat sheet, but you can see him making throws when he needs to make the throws.
Back-to-back games where he has 3 touchdowns.
Someone's got to get that 6th or 7th spot.
He's an elite wide receiver as a rookie.
Truly a lose-lose scenario for both sides.
Welcome back to the Full Maruski Podcast by Power 88, Dean Radio, and Secret Weapon Consulting. And goodness gracious, did we have some Monday Night Football games or what? This is why I love the Monday Night doubleheaders. Bring shit like this. I love it. Biggest story of the night. First game, Falcons, Bills. Falcons upset Buffalo 24-14. Of course, the biggest story in this whole thing, the Patriots take first place in the AFC East because of the tiebreaker from their win on Sunday Night Football last week. Baby, how sweet. I'm not going to say how sweet it is, but goodness. Pats are back. It's like they never left. And I love it. Talk about the Falcons-Bills game first, though. Falcons had total control this entire game. They basically ran away with this thing in the first half and kind of just coasted through the second half. Almost choked it, for sure. But, you know, at the end of the day, Eagles freaking punched the Bills in the mouth in the first half and just kept rolling the rest of the game. But if you're on the Bills side, boy, Josh Allen did not look good. He was getting a lot of pressure on him this entire game, too. This was an ugly offensive performance. They did a good job on defense to strap up again and slow down the Atlanta offense. But like Drake London, Bijan, they had monster games. There was no slowing those guys down. All around, great win for Atlanta. If you're Buffalo, boy, you're reeling a little bit. 2 tough losses on primetime. Now you're 4-2. Now you're in second place in the division. Not where you thought you would be, to say the least. Around the table, let's go Tuck first.
I thought it was a decent game. I thought Atlanta was running away from it in the first half. They almost scored a fourth touchdown towards the end, but Drake London was out of bounds, unfortunately.
That was an insane play. Insane. As a Drake London fantasy owner, that was one of the more unexpected plays I've ever seen in my life.
It went from what is he doing to, oh my God, he's about to score, to what an idiot, he didn't score. Oh. And then here comes the second half. The Bills come back down, immediately score because the run game all of a sudden just got better and they started to move the ball. And then it was a matter of, can Atlanta keep the ball long enough and put more points on the board? And then it just kind of spiraled from there. And then you saw in the tail end of the game, Josh Allen starting to move the ball down the field. And then in the moment of truth, the ball gets tipped up in the air, intercepted. I was like, yes, he's playing for the other team. Yes. Isn't that 2 interceptions this game?
Yes.
Right before the end of the half, and then one at the end of the game. I was like, he is human. He does make mistakes like this.
Those are 2 bad mistakes. Bad mistakes.
Yeah, those were bad.
Well, I'm surprised the Bills were even throwing the football to begin with at the end of the first half. I felt like they should have just ran that out.
The Bills kind of ran it. Like, going into halftime?
Yeah, I feel, because there was what, like, there was what, like, 13 seconds left on the clock. They had, like, two timeouts, yeah, but that just, I don't know. I feel like, risking it, especially when your receivers haven't been getting open at all in that entire first half.
True, but I thought they were trying to get a 2-for-1, get like a field goal here and then get the ball back and try to score again. So yeah. I thought of it like that. So,
are you talking about at the end of the game, or are you talking about at the first
half? End of the half. That's why they were trying to go for it, because they thought they could get the points at the end and then get back the ball and immediately.
Yeah, score. Yeah.
But then he threw that interception and it all went to, you know. So at the end, congrats to Atlanta. They deserve to win this game. They came out and flat out dominated from the first snap to the last. They put pressure on Josh Allen all game. He did not feel safe in that pocket. James Cook really didn't get much started during the game. He had a few runs here or there, but nothing that couldn't be handled. Atlanta's defense came to play. They shut down anything the Josh Allen-led offense had, and they held them to 14 points. A good win, a good home win for the Atlanta Falcons, and I want to see what else they can do.
CJ.
Oh, I think you said it best, man. Just what a punch in the mouth if you're a Bills fan. You know, I feel like that's really the only way I can describe it. Just what a letdown. You know, like, so here's the thing. Last game, you were at home. And you lost to your division rival in New England. And, you know, they're creeping up behind you for the division. You don't want that, but next you go to Atlanta. And we said, even though Atlanta's got some playmakers, but for all intents and purposes, it should be what we would call a get-right game, right? Well,
yeah.
Atlanta got right. Michael Penix was solid, efficient, not flashy, but getting the job done. Josh Allen, in a game where you needed him to be Superman, he was Green Arrow instead. Went 15 to 26, 180 yards, 2 touchdowns, 2 picks, 1 coming on that last drive. Just brutal, brutal, brutal. And 17 first downs to Atlanta's 22. Buffalo went 2-for-9 on third down. And allowed 4 sacks. And the Bills' offensive line, which, you know, is guys like Spencer Brown, Deion Dawkins, David Edwards, they were harassed. They were under attack all game long. 8 penalties for 64 yards didn't help. And, you know, when you factor in those 2 turnovers, you just weren't going to win, at least not enemy territory. And Atlanta, right, got 443 yards on Buffalo's head. Buffalo only put up 291. They were outgained through the air and on the ground, and Atlanta averaged more yards of play as well. They were outgained, outgunned, and outclassed, and the Buffalo run defense, still looking weak, he couldn't stop anything, as Bijan Robinson averaged almost 9 yards a carry on him. Give him 2 carries, that's an auto first down.
Mm-hmm.
So, for Buffalo... Oh, you better hope these are just early season jitters and growing pains, because that was just ugly. Because think about it, right? Buffalo's kind of, we'll call them the Eagles of the East, I guess, or the Eagles of the AFC is what I meant. Because, you know, they both start out 4-0 and then got 2 consecutive punches in the mouth to go to 4-2. Up next, they're going to Carolina, and as much as you should win that, that's not the guarantee, because they upset Dallas, did they not? And Dallas is
Panthers are hot.
Then
be careful that game.
Yeah, then you have right, Tuck. That's a classic trap game. Then for Buffalo, you're hosting the Chiefs, and are the Chiefs coming back? Maybe. But what's it going to matter if you're on the down? And then, you know, you're going to Miami, where you should win that. Then you're hosting Tampa Bay. And Baker should be the MVP front runner, and that man's out for blood. So, yeah, these next few games are going to be a test. That's really all I got. It's going to get harder. I mean, like I said, so you've got Panthers, Chiefs, Dolphins, and Bills. Dolphins, you should win. You should beat the Panthers, but that's not guaranteed. And you're going to have at least two tough games. So can you bounce back? Can you progress? That's what I think we're all looking for here.
100%. Yeah, and as you mentioned, like Josh Allen, if the MVP race were to be today, I don't think Josh Allen would win the MVP if the season were today, especially with back-to-back not great performances. And Baker Mayfield should be at the top of the list at this point. But Patriots, man, they're at the top now. How about that?
Here we go.
Oh, it's not how sweet it is just yet, but feels good to be at the top of the division again, just like the good old days. Patriots had were atop of the AFC East for a little bit with Mac Jones as well. So it wasn't not too far removed, but I mean, still
any better. I would assume you thought you guys were winning the division this year if I didn't know any better.
I mean, look, I feel like if you look at the Patriots schedule now with this Falcons win, though, it does get a little bit tougher at that point because Falcons shown that they can beat the Bills. And obviously Tampa Bay is going to be a tough test in that, dealing with an MVP like Baker or MVP season out of Baker. So definitely got that much tougher, but I'm not, I don't know. I feel like I'm still not worried about what's ahead for them.
Yeah, I feel like that's a very measured take, we'll call it. But as a whole, I don't want to get my hopes up. I actually don't.
Yeah.
Like, don't get me wrong. I'm happy for the Pats. You know, they are my team. They are who I root for. But I also really want to pump the brakes here because we've seen this before. It's like that guy from that meme. I've played these games before because last time we all thought Mac Jones was the one. And as Pats fans, yeah, we all got burned. And I think I speak for all Pats fans here when I say, oh, God, I sincerely, really, actually do not want to go through that again. That wasn't very fun. So the best thing I think they can do is just drown out the noise, right? You know, you just got to put your head down, keep doing it. And to be fair, Drake May is a better leader than Mac Jones. He's got a better arm and he's faster. He's making throws and plays that Mac Jones couldn't even dream of. And on top of that, we've got Mike Vrabel, the Mac Jones team did have Belichick, but that's late-term Belichick. We don't want that. My point is all signs are pointing in the right direction, but stay optimistic, but don't lose track. Because and I think Drake Mason something like that too, and Stephon Diggs like, hey, you know, we beat the Bills, we were the talk of the town, but you know, and Vrabel said if you watched the post game after they beat the Saints, you know, we're not at a point we can start celebrating wins yet. You know, we got to stay hungry, and I think that's what they'll do.
Yeah, I agree. Tuck, would you like to respond? Would you like to say anything?
Congrats to the New England Patriots. It's nice to know you guys are top of your division, while the Ravens, unfortunately, are at the bottom of our we're at the bottom of our division with the Browns.
Hey, I'll be getting Lamar back soon.
I think you guys asked the question earlier if I thought the Ravens were a playoff team. Unfortunately, yes. It's because I looked at our schedule. We went from having the sixth toughest schedule at the beginning of the season towards to where we are now. We have the 27th. So I'm like, okay, that can help. And plus we're getting players back. So it's possible we could go on a run. But I swear to you, if we miss the playoffs, I need that head coach gone. I tried with John here. I'm trying here. But I need him gone, and I need Zach Org to go with him. I don't.
You know something, Chris? You can laugh, but I agree with Tuck.
No,
Tuck,
I agree.
You of all people know that I, you know, for all our interactions both on and off camera, I'm not a Harbaugh fan. I have
I've
never been a Harbaugh fan. And I don't want to say I'm being vindicated after all this time, but actually, no, yes, I am. I definitely totally am being vindicated after all this time. And I am not going to lie, it feels good.
I just want the DC to go. But if John is sticking with him, he has to go too.
Yes, that's how it works.
I'm more laughing because it's all true. Like, I'm laughing because it's all just true and it's funny.
But congrats to the Patriots. Boo-hoo to the Bills. You guys played bad. You guys lost twice. You deserve both losses. Move on.
Yeah. Looking at the other two other quarterbacks that were in this and that are sophomores in the NFL this season, Jaden Daniels and Caleb Williams. Caleb Williams gets his revenge as a Jake Moody game-winning field goal gets the Bears a 25-24 victory in the second Monday Night Football game. And this was a game where the Bears had pretty much total control in the first half. And then Washington stormed their way back in the second half. Looked like that the two-point conversion was going to the failed two-point conversion was going to hurt them, and Washington drove downfield. But Jaden Daniels, slow start, good comeback, but boy, a fumble to end the game. Fumble to essentially lose the game as the Bears recovered, brought it back downfield, got the game winner. And now the Bears, oh baby, Bears are a little hot themselves now. They're now 3-2 after the Detroit loss where they gave up 52. It's three in a row, and that's now back-to-back scores or back-to-back games where they've won 25-24 on a game-winning field goal. How about that? You like coincidences? You like trends? There's your trend for today. But all around, another good win for Chicago. In this case, a primetime revenge game from the Hail Mary that that Washington got on them from last season. And Bears are rolling right now. I'd like to see more of playing 60 minutes, but in this case, you know, you're playing a Commanders team that should have a good offense, but I think the real storyline here is I think the Jaden Daniels sophomore slump may be confirmed. I don't know. The three touchdowns is kind of what's throwing a bit of a smoke screen at me right now. I don't know about you guys. CJ.
Call me crazy, but I don't really want to call this a sophomore slump yet. I mean, if we're in like week 8 or week 9 and things haven't improved, I mean, then yeah, we can say that. But I don't know. Maybe I'm weird for holding out hope, but I'm not panicking just yet. And you have to remember, he was hurt. So part of me does feel like his stats aren't really indicative of what we're going to get from him later down the line. And it's not like he got shellacked. Yeah, that fumble sucked. Yeah, it was costly. He did have another one in the game that wasn't recovered, and he had a pick. So that was two turnovers. But I don't think it's time to sound the alarm bells. But for this game, and if we're assigning blame, then yeah, some of it's going to have to go to Jaden Daniels. Because I have to be even-handed here. I did see a post on IG, and I think it's right, where they said, oh, if Caleb Williams had that costly fumble and a pick, everybody would be, you know, attacking him, breathing down his neck and saying he cost him the game. We should keep that same energy for Jaden Daniels. And yeah, I do think that's correct, ultimately. For what it's worth, I don't think Caleb Williams was especially spectacular. I think he played a solid game manager role. You know, 17 for 29, 252 yards and a touchdown. Daniels did have three touchdowns, but two costly turnovers. He had that pick and that late game fumble. So, you know, it's not exactly sunshine and roses over there. And the Commanders' defense broke more than bent. But at the end of the day, this is a learning experience. You know, you just got to take this one on the chin and bounce back. You know, this is only Daniel's second game back from that injury. So we'll see how he does next. They're going to be in Dallas. And I think that's going to be fun. You know, there's going to be some fireworks there. It's going to be a real shootout. So we'll see. But as a whole, yeah, those turnovers really hurt them. And, you know, a lot of times in football, look, I know it's trite. I know it's been done to death. But come on. It's all about who turns the ball over less. And the Commanders had three turnovers. The Bears had none. The Bears won. Pretty simple.
Tuck?
Well, when you look back on the game from the beginning to end, Jaden Daniels was the main reason why the Washington Commanders lost. I think the Bears played a pretty good game, all things considered. Caleb Williams wasn't phenomenal, but he was good enough to win them the game, had that rushing touchdown. Didn't do anything to cost them the game. I don't think he did anything spectacular to win it. I think DeAndre Swift played phenomenal, over 100 yards rushing, and then that 55-yard touchdown pass to get them to like 22-24, and then just a matter of them going out and kicking the field goal at the tail end. When I look at Jaden Daniels' game, that costly pick in the first half and then literally letting the game slip away from him in the fourth. Sorry, cracked myself up. But when the fumble happened, I was like, no! They had the game in hand. They had control of the situation. And then the fumble happens, and it's like, no, they can't lose like this. Not like this. Because I already knew if the Bears got the ball back, they would just run out the clock and then kick the field goal at the end. And the Commanders, if they just got a couple more first downs, they run out the clock and call it a game. But those turnovers, three turnovers to zero on the Chicago Bears part, was the difference, in my opinion, and two of those turnovers were because of Jaden Daniels' costly turnovers with the football.
Yeah, no, for sure. DeAndre Swift had a really good game in this one, too. You mentioned it, Tuck, ended up with 14 carries for 108 yards, which was 7.7 per carry, and a game that he desperately needed as well, because he had been struggling to kind of get going. The three of the four games prior to this one, he averaged or didn't really get over 3 yards per carry at all. So this is a game that you like to see from DeAndre Swift. You know it's in him. So just a matter of if he can perform. But yeah, it wasn't a Caleb Williams. Definitely just, he made plays that needed to be made, and he put the Bears into a position to win.
Yeah, that definitely sounds about right.
Yeah. Anything else you guys want to touch on from this?
From this game?
No, not really.
Commanders got to be careful, because I'm not going to lie. They don't seem like head and shoulders above everyone else in the NFC East. The Eagles are clearly the head, and then the Giants don't look like the Giants anymore. They actually look somewhat competent. I could see them making a run somehow. So if the Commanders aren't careful, they better watch out for the fifth, sixth, or seventh spot in the NFC East.
Well, they got a bit of a gauntlet their next four games. Cowboys, Chiefs, a Cowboys team that's getting back CeeDee Lamb, Chiefs, Seahawks, Lions.
Oh, that's
going to be rough.
That's a gauntlet and a half.
There's no gimme game there, except maybe the Cowboys. And that's not a gimme game at all.
No.
We're going to step aside when we come back. Top three, bottom three for week six.
It may not have always showed it in the stat sheet, but you can see him making throws when he needs to make the throws.
Back-to-back games where he has three touchdowns.
Someone's got to get that six or seven spot.
He's an elite wide receiver as a rookie.
Truly a lose-lose scenario for both sides.
Week six, top three, bottom three. All right. I'd get into the whole welcome back thing, but it's starting to get late. I want to get through this. Top three. First team on the board, the Panthers. Back-to-back good wins. I mean, the Dolphins, obviously, they aren't really all that in a bag of chips, but you had a good comeback win against the Dolphins, and you have a game against the Cowboys where you're able to beat them in essentially a shootout. It was a race to 30, and you got there first, and this is back-to-back solid games from Bryce Young as well, surprisingly from Bryce Young. Rico Dowdle is a man possessed right now. Thank you, Rico Dowdle, for my fantasy points. The Atlanta Falcons, kind of the same thing with them, but with them, their bounce back after getting blown out by the Panthers 30-0. Now, two games in a row that they have beaten playoff teams. Last week against the Commanders in this one against the Bills on Monday Night Football. So they're starting to get themselves into the right track as well and potentially getting themselves a playoff spot. And finally, from Thursday night, the New York Football Giants. Boy, Jackson Dart he's a stud. Cam Scataboo is an animal. There's not much else to say besides the fact that Brian Dable's job may have been saved, maybe saved because of these two guys. Moving to the bottom three, the Eagles. Once again, only playing one half of football. And surprisingly, the one half of football is the first half, as they looked terrible in the second half. A lot of questions going on with that team right now. Same thing with the Bills. Bills, next team on the list, on the bottom three, losing to the Falcons in another game where started out slow and could never really get it going. Looked like that they were going to be competitive in that final drive, but Josh Allen just did not have a good game and ended up ending the game on a pick. But yeah, Josh Allen didn't look good. Defense held up in the second half, but what good is it when your offense can't get going? And the final team on the bottom three, the New York Jets. Now, you could put this game in general. You could throw the Broncos as an honorable mention, and I want to talk about the Broncos, too, for this, because there's a lot. This, you should not be happy about the way this game went on. But for the Jets, Aaron Glenn, I don't know if he's a good football coach. This roster is terrible. Justin Fields is terrible. We're 5 years in on Justin Fields. We know what he is, and he's not a good quarterback. They had 12 yards total net passing on Sunday. 12 yards. Justin Fields was sacked as many times as he completed a pass. Nine sacks, nine completed passes. Terrible, terrible team. And I look at the way that first half ended as well, with Aaron Glenn just like looked like they were going to try to do something when they went for the fake punt, got the first down, and proceeded to literally do nothing with it. I couldn't believe, and Garrett Wilson was pissed. He was furious and like basically throwing a fit on the sideline. Like, that's your number one receiver. Like, geez, I just don't get how you just completely, you're at midfield and you're like, eh, we're all set. Let's just go to that locker room. We're good.
Yeah, that two-minute drill was atrocious. Also, Garrett Wilson hyperextended his knee and is going to miss, and I quote, a couple of weeks.
Yep, that's right. Forgot about that, too. But, yeah, so that's week six, top three, bottom three. Let us know who you think should have made the list, who shouldn't be on the list, this and that. Pick them. Want to do pick them now?
Yeah, sure. All right.
Go through some honorable mentions. Or do you have it up already?
I have it up. I can calculate right now.
Oh, okay.
So, Adam's final two picks with the Chiefs and the Bears definitely came in clutch. He picked against all of us. He lone wolfed twice. So, Adam has, ready? One. Unfortunately, he did pick Miami. Miami did not win. Also picked Jacksonville. Jacksonville did not win. So one, two, three, four, five, six, seven, eight, nine, ten.
Oh, not bad, Adam.
Okay. Yeah. So Adam. Yep. So Adam, for the record, picked Denver, the Rams, Indy, Carolina, New England, Pittsburgh, Tampa, Green Bay, Kansas City, and Chicago for 10.
CJ, for time's sake, let's get right through it.
All right, fair. Chris, you have, are you ready? Are you sitting down?
Yeah, I'm sitting
one,
down.
Two, three, four, five, six, seven, eight, nine, ten.
Ooh, it's high.
Yeah.
I was thinking I was going to do bad because I'm in a different pick'em pool and I only got five right, but that's based off of spreads. We're not going off of spreads.
Oh, okay. Yeah, we don't do spreads. It's pure pick'em here. Then there's me. I got one, two, three, four, five, six, seven, eight, nine, 10, 11.
Ooh.
And Tuck, drum roll, please. You had one, two, three, four, five, six, seven, eight.
Ooh.
I got to do better.
Hey, you know what, everyone? All the boys got a 50% at least.
I was going to say the difference for me was that I picked Seattle. And it also doesn't help that I got, I think, nine of the first 10 picks right. So, yeah.
Nice.
Yeah.
Part of me now feels like I should have picked the Jet. Like, after the – so in that pick'em, I ended up switching my pick from Broncos spread to the Jets spread after the Giants-Eagles game because, remember – CJ on the Friday episode, I was like,
yeah,
something about these two games I don't really like. And lo and behold, they kind of came true. Pause.
Right. Fair enough.
It's not a pause, but
it's right. Really not.
No. Anything else you guys want to touch on before we conclude today's show? Wow.
No, that's pretty much it.
I'm good.
Nice. Obviously, there were some injuries from this past week, like Puka being hurt and possibly missing a couple weeks. We'll get to all that and more for the Friday episode for the Pick'em. But that'll do it for us today. Thank you for tuning in to another Tuesday episode of the Full Brewski Podcast. New episode coming out on Friday at 8 a.m. Be sure to subscribe to our YouTube channel and also have all our episodes available on Spotify, Spreaker, Apple Podcast, iHeartRadio, Google Podcast, and so much more. Be sure to follow our Instagram, FumbleRooski_podcast, to keep up with the pod and the latest coverage on the NFL. Otherwise, he's CJ Medeiros. He's Justin Tucker. I'm Chris Kostich. We'll see you on Friday. Over and out.